This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Steve Brooks, and today I'm talking to Rick Ryder, Senior Director, Product Management at Infor, and Mike Kalinowski, Senior Product Manager at Infor. Hi, Rick. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks, Steve, for having us.
This is Mike Kalinowski. Good. Yourself?
Yesterday, you launched the AI Coleman's platform. Can you just talk us a little bit about how we got to this position? Because obviously the platform was launched 2 years ago, 2017. Just wanted to understand where it came from and where we are now, really.
When we first started conceiving where we could go with AI products at Infor 2 years ago, that's where the Coleman brand started. It's named after Miss Catherine Coleman Johnson, as many people know, the famous NASA mathematician. And we started down a couple different paths. So it represents a few different products underneath that brand. So, of course, we've got something maybe we'll get to talk a little bit about in the digital assistants, more natural language processing-based inquiries into the system, a new user experience, if you will. Of course, what you're alluding to is the AI platform, so the machine learning modeling environment and ultimately how you can consume and create ROI on top of machine learning, as well as some advancements we're doing in the RPA space. But it's been a natural progression to we went GA with the digital assistant, and now we're unveiling the AI platform as well. But it's been a journey of about 18-plus months or so, where we started where it was more about how can we bring ML to those companies that are not investing in it yet. Many companies may have an AI practice, although they may not be realizing it yet, realizing the value, because consuming these models is hard. It's a hard thing to do. So we wanted just to make it really easy. That's where we came out with the modeling environment within the context of Infor OS. But as we've matured, we've added a whole lot more advanced features because the way it's been built and consumed within our Infor OS, so we're talking about integration, our data strategy with the data lake, the exposure with the API gateway in a secure manner, all those outside pieces that's required in the AI project, is now a significant tool for those more mature AI companies as well. So that's how we've matured, and finally, we're GA today.
The one word in there I want to pick up on is easy, because there's going to be a lot of people listening and thinking, I've got no hope. Don't I need a data scientist to do that? How can I leverage this stuff when I've got no idea?
I would say no, you can't necessarily get rid of the need for a data scientist. The more knowledge you have in the field, the better it's going to be. But the point is that we're still at a first mover advantage in a lot of this in the enterprise. And the reason I believe that is it's too far removed from business users. So if we can put it in the hands of business users to where they can start to relate to it, and they're actually looking at the data and actually correlating the data themselves to start to understand the patterns, that's where you're going to see the value, and that's where you're going to get the adoption. So we created the modeler to say, hey, when I'm doing some of these data cleansing type steps, that's 80% of what an AI project takes, if we're doing that in the hands of the business users in a way that I'm not programming or coding or scripting anything, then that's going to be really powerful and something they can start to use today.
How does Infor help them use it? Because, as I said, not every company has a data scientist, and actually finding data scientists nowadays is not actually that easy, is it?
Right. We've got practices and services built up around strictly using Infor OS and Coleman. One of the things we've been touting this week is that we're reducing implementation time of bringing a machine learning model of the insights, if you're doing price optimization or whatever it may be, down to 4 to 6 weeks, and you're done. Put it on a retraining schedule, but ultimately you're consuming that within the ERP. That's quite a paradigm shift than what the market's used to. We have these services built up within our group to where now we can come in and do things quickly, and we can also train you at the same time, train your business users to start maintaining these things. We want the AI platform and Infor OS to be about the entire life cycle, not just the algorithm.
Is every Infor application on the platform yet?
For the most part, we can say yes. It all begins with our data strategy and what we're doing with the data lake, and we've had rapid adoption of all of our core big major applications. As long as they have that, yeah, they're using it today, because now we can take those schema, we can take that data that's being published and replicated into the data lake and create all of these insights.
Most businesses don't just run Infor software, much as you'd like them to. So they've got third-party applications which also store third-party data. But ideally, to make artificial intelligence work, you need to have access to all your data. So how do they get their data from the other applications onto that data lake?
It doesn't suit customers or enterprises to only store Infor data in our data lake and enable that for machine learning of only Infor data. There needs to be value, and we need to create data ingestion opportunities to start blending in third-party data, whether that's from other vendors, other API providers, and so forth. With our layered technology stack, with Infor Ion providing data ingestion for us, we're able to connect with a suite of technology connectors, connect to databases, file servers, and so forth, so that really, wherever the data resides, we have a capability of acquiring that data and then moving that into the data lake. that lets us expose that information to Coleman, as well as the plethora of other data investments and business domains that may also simultaneously have a use for that data as well, because this is, at the end of the day, multi-purpose. We want to create value out of storage and persistence to help customers and enterprises really invest in not just their short-term analytics goals, but really longer-term enterprise strategies, and machine learning plays a really critical role in that.
Some of the other software vendors who are also investing AI have formed partnerships with other AI vendors. You've obviously got the relationship with AWS already. Are you leveraging some of the AWS AI?
Yeah, we are, from an infrastructure perspective. We have a very differentiated and unique view into how we create the, let's call it the AI or machine learning experience. How do we take this to fruition? It's a bit differentiated, but we are using SageMaker today to use their training APIs and hosting APIs to get this into their cloud and do these things at scale, which is a tremendous help, and we've got a great partnership there. And then if we're looking at the NLP side, we just launched our integration with Alexa for Business as well. So we're always looking for more ways to extend this out and looking for the best ways to get this in the hands of our customers at the end of the day.
What about some of the other people like IBM Watson, and obviously can give you specialist weather information, for example, through those?
Not quite yet. There's always some opportunities, especially when it comes to data, if there's some sort of data partnership that we can form here. But we do think we have a differentiation in multi-domain here at Infor, and it's part of our industry-specific cloud suite strategy. But specifically to AI, we don't have any partnerships quite yet, but it's always something we're open to, because this whole crowdsourcing type mentality when it comes to especially the deep insights we're going to be doing in the future, it's always going to help.
When we've talked theoretically, what difference does that actually make to business? Can you give me some examples?
We talk a lot about our industry templates that we're working on and have produced, and with our LA customers that we're working on today. If we look at some of our reference customers, being Acushnet, CERN, FHR, and those of the like, we're talking on the magnitudes of tens of millions of dollars in potential savings they can realize if they could better understand how data can keep more cash on hand. Let's say if we're looking at inventory intelligence, we're trying to see how many turns I should have, or it's a spare part analytics process that I'm trying to run as it relates to predictive maintenance. Predictive maintenance, we've got a huge EAM practice. That's a big area for us as well. Price optimization, basically any opportunity to where I think I might understand why something happens, there's probably some data that would back that up, and I might be able to understand it a little bit better. We can build in the platform today.
How do you balance? If you're working with one customer, they build up the models. That's sometimes their IP. Is there not a point where you're actually generating some Infor IP that you can then effectively resell out to the rest of the customer base? So inventory optimization, I know you're doing it in healthcare. That's across the whole of the healthcare organizations. But you're seeing that in other sectors as well, and are you going to be able to deliver that? And how real is that now?
We do have some ML-based practices across Infor in different suites today. What our strategy is to consolidate that onto the AI platform for exactly what you're alluding to, is that repeatability across all these different industries. Yeah, we do have a micro-vertical approach to this, but a lot of these businesses, regardless of what industry they're in, they have common problems, common opportunities. So we do plan on packaging those up more and more and be able to use those across all.
How soon is that?
Very soon. It's in operational mode now. You may be familiar, we've got an internal group of data scientists known as Dynamic Science Labs. They're now 100% dedicated to building their IP on top of the Coleman AI platform. So we're talking maybe 5 to 10 that we're working with right now today, but soon it'll be across all cloud suites with all that content.
One of the things that people talk about nowadays is time to value in the business. So if I want to engage them for and actually start using the Coleman AI, how long before actually I'm going to see value?
We say under 6 weeks. If you want to engage in a machine learning problem or opportunity, in under 6 weeks, we can bring it to a customer. And when I say bring it, I mean it's not just the model. It's to fruition. It's to your business users to say, hey, Coleman's predicting this is going to happen. This is what you should do. Or let me automate a back-end process to create a maintenance order or reorder inventory or to cut back on how I'm scaling my business. All that should be done in less than 6 weeks, and it's a big differentiator for us. It's how we've orchestrated. We call it the AI ensemble. How we've done this, because ultimately it starts with an integration problem. It starts with a data correlation as the next step, and it moves into the modeling, which, as Kevin alluded to on main stage, that's been around for a while. And there's tools out there to where you can create these models, but then how do you use it? Well, now we automate that back into practice and create a secure API point that can be consumed directly back into the application. So it's kind of abstract, but we embed by abstracting the ML outside of the cloud suite and re-ingest it back in.
I'd like to also add, there's been a lot of tremendous innovations over the last decade that we've made at different components and different layers of the platform that really accelerate these customers that they can embrace machine learning and artificial intelligence much more rapidly because of their mindshare investment and their adoption of our technology stack, everything from integration to building out their analytics. And very often customers follow that maturity model of keeping applications and people in sync with the data, then looking at how can we actually extract value with analytics, and then they grow along that maturity model, and then we're just layering on that machine learning right on top. So they're beneficiaries, and the platform is a beneficiary of a lot of investments that customers, as well as our team at Infor OS, have made over the last nearly dozen years here, which really helps rapidly explore the data and provide them with a really robust strategy here to immediately use that data in a number of different business domains.
We talk about data. Is there a prerequisite for the amount of data you need to really have an effect?
Believe it or not, we've done some early proof of concepts with even with some of our partners as far back as a year ago. Customers will only give us so much data in a proof of concept, but we can extract insights in a year's worth of data or even less. It just depends on what kind of patterns or how strong the data is. But of course, the more we have, the better. The more grounded the truth is going to be in those sort of results. But I would say you can definitely get some benefits in a little amount of data now. But of course, the more the merrier.
And you mentioned digital assistants earlier, which was got launched last year. What progress have you made in that? Because digital assistants aren't always widely used, and they're often very focused, shall we say. They're certainly not generally intelligent yet, and they're not going to be for a long time. But what progress have you made on digital assistants, and what use cases have you got that actually people are taking advantage of them?
I have a very strong view on this, because I hate the term chatbots. It's very different from the way we went about this. It's not a customer service related thing. It certainly could be. It's not a support related thing. It's more about getting users outside of the known user interface, so the user experience of a common ERP. Today, the progress we've made is we have over 25,000 APIs available across of our cloud suites. And why that is significant is now every single skill, as we call it, can be connected back to those APIs. So it's not just, can I find out how much inventory is on hand, which is a very, very common one, but can I post a requisition? Can I actually execute work, not just inquire, but execute work? Now we have thousands of skills that have already been pre-made out of the box. That sort of illustrates it's not a one-to-one from API to skills, because we also do some really complex orchestration of APIs to where I'm chaining many processes together to, say, take a 30-minute process down to, say, 30 seconds by interacting with an Alexa device.
That's RPA, isn't it, though?
Absolutely is. I have a very strong view on the terminology of RPA as well.
What are customers actually using today?
Digital assistant is very heavily adopted, especially in the healthcare space. I would say within Cloud Suite Financials and HCM, just because of their robust nature of their APIs. So things of how can I interact with my workforce? How can I find things out about my workforce? How can I progress? How can I promote? How can I do all these things away from that user interface? Because those are very common things that I should be able to do quickly. That's probably our biggest area of adoption.
Are people generally still using text?
Yeah, believe it or not. It also has to do with the ambiance of the facility or where you might be interacting.
Voice is always the ideal, but actually it's a lot harder to do, and it's a lot harder to make work properly. Most people get frustrated by Alexa and Siri very quickly if they're not in a very small room with no echo and perfect silence.
Yeah, absolutely, and all the different dialects. So if I'm trying to establish an intent, I'm from the state of Georgia, I've got a little bit of a southern accent, so maybe it'll interact a little bit differently with me. But no, we're progressing our NLP models a little bit more, and the more training we have, the better it gets. It's more about mobility if I want to have that access outside of, say, my computer. But yeah, we do have probably primarily heavy adoption in text, but it's growing on the voice side, especially with our partnership with Alexa.
And you like partner Siri as well?
We want to open this up as much as we can. One notion of Infor OS, we kind of alluded to it earlier, is that we want to be open to everything. It's not just about Infor products. As you mentioned, we want everyone to be on all Infor products, but we've built everything with open standards to where if it's integration, if it's common user experience, which is kind of what we're speaking about here, or if it's data and AI, we want to be able to take it from anywhere and put it anywhere.
Does that mean Infor OS might sit on Azure or GCP in the future?
Perhaps.
RPA, obviously more announcements this week about RPA, but also there's a hint of ScreenFlows coming next year.
Yeah,
can you explain more about what those will do?
Yeah, absolutely. We're already in development about this, and I mentioned my strong feelings about the RPA terminology. We like to say we've been beyond RPA for quite some time. So within Infor OS, we have our Ion integration and workflow layer that's tried and true. All of our customers use it. It's a proven commodity with us right now. And now that we can bake in machine learning output into those workflows and create intelligent workflows and intelligent automation and orchestration, That's really smart back-end automation, but it's not the traditional RPA that the market's used to. There is a lot of value there because, yeah, I'm not having to change my business process, although I would say that maybe it's a little more brittle when it's on the user interface. So, yes, we are looking at the screen scraping technology to see how I can create those visual bots, but all of that automation we can do out of the box today.
And where are you getting the traction for that? If you're getting it out of the box, what kind of industries are starting to use it?
Yeah, same ones. It really has to do with healthcare, manufacturing, all of our big products that have so many of those robust, the 25,000 plus APIs. It's all built in the same sort of infrastructure.
Have you got any live examples yet, customers?
Grimco, one of our reference customers doing this today, was chaining a lot of these different skills together. So if we want to blend it back to Alexa for Business, it was an orchestration. It was RPA, as you alluded to a little bit earlier, to where we took, I believe it was 6 different APIs within our Landmark platform, and basically said, how can I close out a potential process and take a process from 30 minutes down to 5 seconds on an Alexa device? It's happening everywhere. These customers, too, it's not something that takes forever. We're talking about business users, project managers, actually, that are building these orchestrations and skills in a matter of minutes. I think we built 10 in 15 minutes a few weeks ago with one of our customers.
We talked about ingestion of third-party data. Do you have the tools to cleanse that data? Because obviously when you're putting it on from your own applications, you know it's good data and you know what data you need to put into the data lake. So how do you make sure your third-party data is just as clean?
Absolutely. We do have tools to help cleanse or govern that data. But of course, with a data lake opportunity here, we also encourage a lot of our customers to store that data as is. There's a lot of value in being able to identify and see what the data look like by the person or the application generating it the day of. Moving or shifting that transformation or cleansing piece on the consumption side. So now we have the original view of that data. What are we going to do to clean that up and ensure that Burst or Coleman AI can then appropriately cleanse that? Of course, we provide tooling throughout the tool chain to ensure that if you need to cleanse that data because it's business critical, you can absolutely do so with our mapping technologies, our scripting platforms that are based on Python, for example, and then cleanse or homogenize that data as needed. But there's a lot of value in capturing that data, especially over a long period of time, because perhaps those anomalies actually provide material value, especially in the governance space. If you're potentially stripping out anomalies or erroneous data from the data sets that you're ingesting into the data lake, perhaps you're sacrificing some of the risk mitigation value somewhere down the line. So there's a tremendous need to store the data in multiple different contexts, of course, business case dependent here.
You've just launched your GRC application, which sits on top of the data lake. So is that what you're talking about, actually now being able to highlight those discrepancies within data?
GRC now reads directly from the data lake, and we're streaming that content into their insights modules in a couple of different capacities and domains to help feed them and provide that information as quickly as possible. But they need that data in order to cleanse, sanitize, and build those business rules to appropriately reduce that risk in the enterprise here.
And GRC will be using the AI platform as well, because now we can start to basically prevent maybe fraudulent or things that should not happen in the system, role dependent or user specific.
Lots of announcements this year. What are we going to see in 2 years' time, say, in terms of coming out?
Yeah, as far as our progressive AI roadmap, we've got 2 trains going right now. So it's more about how can we get closer and closer to auto ML? And ultimately, that means how can I get closer to deep learning? How can I get even beyond the modeling experience to where, hey, I just pump all my data in, you find the insights and tell me what I need to do and when I need to do it. On the other hand, we do have, this is where our market has shifted a little bit because our customers just see all the things we can do with this ensemble of N4OS to where now we have advanced user features as well. So how can I create a library of my own IP and my own algorithms that I've been developing? How can I put that into practice? But in, let's say in 2 years, I think you're going to see us have a very, very progressive deep learning practice specific to that auto ML.
On that note as well, data fabrics and data federation plays a huge role in our 2-year strategy window here, because at the end of the day, storage is a commodity where we store that data. We'd like it to be the N4 data lake with our technology solutions to ingest that data. But the value is not in the storage itself, but in the services and the IP that you can provide on top of that. And so over time, what you'll begin to see us investing in is data fabric solutions and being able to peer in to other clouds or other data storage repositories and still provide that same value-added service on top of that data, regardless of where it's stored. So it's really expanding the footprint of where that data is stored, how it's stored, and then still providing that same level of value so that you don't have to undergo a huge tectonic shift in data strategy or how you're managing ETL pipelines, jobs, processes, and data storage solutions, licensing least of which.
if the ML is getting more complex, how do you take account of explainable AI? How do you actually surface and explain what the AI is doing, though? Because that's the growing concern among regulators at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. And we kind of call them feedback loops. How can we prove that what Coleman is doing is accurate? How can we trust it? And that's where GRC plays a role here, too, because Coleman, in our eyes, is no different than a user. So constantly auditing what Coleman's doing and servicing that to our users is something we're working on today.
And what about ethical use?
Yeah, same sort of thing. As long as we can monitor those patterns, that has to be front and center. You're absolutely right. Being able to not just let it go on its own, but to make sure these patterns that it's learning, again, hooking back into GRC to make sure we're creating those rules to make sure that, hey, these are the boundaries. You can't go past these boundaries. Putting it in a box and letting it run, I think that's the best way we can do that.
I asked this question to somebody else who was putting in AI and machine learning. They had the explainable AI like you do. If you're working on HCM data, you have the risk of crossing ethical boundaries and crossing things like GDPR and being discriminatory and having unconscious bias within the AI because it depends on how you've done the AI modeling. Have you got any thoughts around that and how you're going to approach that?
Mike and I have been talking a lot about how can we anonymize data as we're going through these cleansing process. I think it's important to know that when we're doing a lot of the data cleansing in the Coleman platform itself, we're talking about dragging and dropping things in to where remove duplicates, or I don't necessarily have to go in and look at the data and be able to see it myself. It's the common problems to make sure I can dump them into machine learning. If we can get to the point to where we can anonymize that to where it's not visible to a user, that's going to help a lot with that problem.
And our data catalog plays a huge front and center role in this level of governance now and in the future. This is where you can identify PII, PHI, GDPR, and compliance data. Today, that might be used for field-level security with respect to reporting and what users can and cannot access. But as GDPR case law matures, as new compliance regulations are unveiled worldwide, in California and Germany most recently, then we're going to find an increasing need to put compliance very, very upfront in that upstream chain to ensure that any ethical boundaries are not actually crossed and that we institute the rules in the catalog layer to ensure that people aren't compromising, intentionally or otherwise, rules or SOPs within their organization about how that data is actually being consumed and used. And so the catalog plays a tremendous role in instituting those governance policies for data access, as well as what that data is actually going to be used for and understanding how it's going to be used in the organization.
Traditionally, ERPs just capture standard data, but nowadays, obviously, you've got to bring in images for e-commerce, etc. Are you doing any work around imaging?
In a lot of areas, both in our document management solution, but also in the data lake. Ultimately, we're a storage repository for structured, semi-structured, and unstructured data. And truly, enterprises generate all sorts across different silos. Very often now, we're seeing that customers want to put audio and visual data inside of the data lake as well and create value out of that. And so we're working on technologies to begin inferring or reading those AV files and actually extracting value, both through machine vision, as well as being able to parse out even content from binary files like PDFs, for example. An invoice provides you with a lot of valuable data stuck in a binary file format. But we have capabilities to contextualize that with Cloud Suite data, with third-party data, and ultimately provide customers, users, and analysts with the data sets that they need to continue with their day and their course of business. So absolutely, we're looking into a lot of AV and geo data formats to create interfaces and value out of actually storing that inside of our data lake today.
We've got customers looking at building their own image recognition models, and for that reason, we're expanding what we're storing into the data lake for exactly that reason. You asked a little bit earlier about where do you see us going after this? Along that same sort of lines, we're starting to look at how can we look at drone technology to where we can stream data in. How can we understand what that data means from a visual standpoint and start doing predictive insights on top of that? Because there's a tremendous value, especially in the asset management space, for that.
Well, what's fantastic about this is that you can store all of this data in the data lake today. There's a lot of value in knowing that this data is going to be tremendously useful for your organization in 2, 5, 10 years' time. Even if it's going underutilized today or not providing material value. But over time, as Infor continues to grow the investments in the types of data that we can query and interrogate and create value out of, then having that data already in a centralized repository already enables you and gets you one step closer to being able to operationalize that data, just like Rick is saying.
And if we look blue sky 10, 15 years in the future, what is it going to look like? And that doesn't necessarily just need to be Infor, but let's talk kind of general business technology in machine learning.
I'm going to give you the not-so-fun answer, and I'm going to say we don't know yet. It's the general principle, though, is especially when we're talking about AI and ML, and specifically deep learning, as long as we can know what's next, doesn't matter about the experience, doesn't matter anything, we're going to be ahead. I think this is going to definitely progress. I think the user experience is going to change drastically, and we're already starting to see that. I think you're going to see so much adoption of a lot of these newer innovative technologies in the enterprise, in technologies in the consumer space we use daily. But now that's going to start to creep. You're going to see a mass amount of adoption in the next 5 to 10 years.
And generally speaking, we're seeing that we're reducing the lag time between consumer technologies and adoption in the marketplace and how that's actually getting rolled into enterprise solutions today. With technologies like Infor Chat and our digital assistants, very rapidly we're building this into the platform and providing multiple different avenues of materializing this data, making it useful with voice, with text, with NLP. When you put an eye on what CES is doing year in and year out at their conventions, and the new technologies that are coming out all around that we're adopting as consumers, general consumers, then I think increasingly we're going to start introducing this into our base platform as well, because there's a lot of value in our everyday lives there. Why can't we operationalize that in the enterprise as well? Very quickly, we're going to see that gap in that lead time is very, very quickly being reduced to a very small window.
I started work when your work computer was a lot faster than your home computer. Do you think we're going to go back to those days where actually the technology within business is more sophisticated again than the technology at the home?
I don't know if we'll see that. I think, as Mike was alluding to, it's like the trendsetter type thing. And I think it's the evolution of the workforce, too. We've been talking about that for a while now. And it's about what tools and technology am I used to using in my daily lives that's actually setting the trends for the workplace now. And I think that's going to continue. My 3-year-old daughter knows more to do with the iPad than I can. It's unbelievable. It's a tough one to call, maybe. But I think the consumer space is definitely going to lead. But I think, as Mike was saying, the adoption into enterprise is going to be almost at par with that.
Probably alluding to like mainframes, for example, and centralized access and utility and running time. And then, of course, now we're back to it with the cloud. But I think the value proposition is much different in acceleration of adoption and innovation that we're able to provide, and at a very, very low cost. Now more than ever, it's easier to start a company and introduce a new idea to the marketplace. And I think that's got to keep rolling and rolling and rolling, because we've reduced the startup costs associated with implementing new ideas in the marketplace. So I think, to Rick's point, who knows in 10 years? Maybe. But looking at the way that the market has shaped up over the last 5 to 10 years, just for consumer electronics and devices, health services, and so forth, I think we're only going to accelerate the pace that we're currently on here.
Thank you very much, Rick. Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.